This is going to be our last hour. We're moving from the mid-70s directly into the 1990s. We're doing so primarily because I don't have terribly many editions in boxes or publications in boxes produced in the 80s. I guess those artists that I was tracking weren't putting things necessarily in boxes. But I guess also I would say that that was a moment where one saw a lot of painting and fewer. I don't recall really there being some kind of groundswell of multiple making or artist book making where the publications were contained in boxes. I think Bayou Press maybe was an exception, and I'm sure that there is some production of boxed editions from the 80s. However, I think there was an explosion, if you will, of publications that were produced by artists, self-publishing. I would say that there was a good number of galleries publishing editions with artists that they were representing, and I don't mean galleries like Pace Wildenstein. I mean Pace Wildenstein didn't exist at that point, or these bigger galleries that had some sort of direct publishing linkage. That the market was marginal in the early 90s, and consequently there was less, let's just say, regular publishing, so thus the artists themselves took up the task. In addition,
it's 2:30.
I would say that there seemed to have been a general move to more idea-based work. There tended to be a move also towards installation. There seemed to have been quite a number of sculptors in comparison to maybe painters that were being shown at that time. I'm not saying that painting stopped. I'm just saying it seemed like the galleries that I was going to internationally, Western Europe and America, were hardly internationally, were showing more sculpture than, or let's just say this much. There wasn't a lot of painting I was seeing when I was going to the galleries that I was going to. So I'm going to probably treat everything in this hour a little bit different than the way I was trying to treat the material in the previous hours, in that because I have a specific collection of editions produced by emerging artists in the 90s, I have more than a handful of such publications, so to treat any of them in great depth means that I don't cover the majority of them. So briefly, I want to introduce...
Did this collection in the 90s, this is something that you didn't... You were collecting these at the time they were made, so this is also a little bit different than collecting the things from Fluxus and from Aspen Magazine and things that you had to acquire later. You were getting these sometimes directly from the editioner.
Correct.
Right?
Yeah. This collection was something where, at this moment in time, I was primarily dealing in historical material, and my base collection was more or less things from the 60s and 70s. I mean, it still is. But I was looking for a way to stay engaged with more emerging art, and I really did notice that there was a lot of alternative publishing going on, which I still believe was a function of the market, but you know, also just that's where I think the artists gravitated. There was a lot of do-it-yourself type publications. There were things weren't necessarily done on a super produced budget. It was more there were this just seemed to be the most immediate way for artists to get material out, just like it was in the late 60s and 70s. And so, yeah, to answer your question, I was buying these things at the points of the the primary points of distribution. I wasn't buying them, let's just say, in a more secondhand resale type venue.
How does that make this different for you?
Well, in some cases, well, in most cases, you had to go to you were dealing with the artists and you were dealing with the primary galleries showing these things to get them, because in general these things didn't have other distribution, so that assumed a different level of engagement. In addition, unlike other material that's historicized, that you look at a catalog resume or you look at an overview book on the history of artist books or the history of multiples, and you have these works, even in the 80s, were well written about at that point in time. And in with this material, you more or less had to figure it out yourself. You had to make your own decisions as to what was, you know, worth getting and not worth getting, because this is only an overview collection.
Because there was a lot produced at this
time.
Well,
there was a good amount produced, but, you know, and there always is a good amount produced, but to make the decisions, you know, without, let's just say, a guidebook or a guide, makes it a little bit of a different investigation. Furthermore, I mean, you have to figure out how these things work as well, and that's part of the attraction, I would say. Yeah, there's probably more
there. How they work together?
Well, no, not how they work together, but how they work individually. I mean, whether or not, in other words, in coming across this box by Blast, published by Blast, which was a Jordan Crandall orchestrated series of, I guess, 5-6 boxed issues, was an attempt to basically, Crandall by himself in some cases, and later with an advisory board, came up with a theme. These are thematic. These are boxes where the contributors were asked to essentially produce something that was towards a particular theme. They submitted their contributions. I guess this is a classic assembling box, in that the participants sent in a number of many copies of what they wanted to show, or how they wanted to be represented. This publication, although was certainly a way to get the work out in a alternative fashion, at the same time it was doing that, it was using the art systems in the art distribution systems in place at the time. So in other words, they were trying to make something different, a box that contained a multitude of editions. In this box right here, there has to be more than 30 contributors, and it's the items are of a completely mixed nature. They basically are popped into a green storage container, a green box. I don't know if it's archival or not, with a list of the names of the maker and a title. However, beyond that, in general, many of the items in this box are not identified. In other words, you look at the item itself, and there is no authorship noted. So it requires a very different kind of reading, of a very different kind of investigation in reviewing this material. Yes, I think in many cases one can piece it together, who did what, and there are certainly some artists here who are, you might say, their work is recognizable if you know their unique work or their other edition work. But there are, this is a mix of artists that were well known or are beginning to become well known from a certain generation, and then there are artists that are older and artists that are completely are quite unknown. Just for example, in this box, which is blast number 4, which is somewhere in the mid-90s, if I'm not incorrect, you have artists from, you know, another generation entirely. For example, William Anastasi, who's somebody that emerged in the 60s, was a good friend of John Cage, played chess with him nearly every day for, you know, periods of time. And sculptor like Dove Bradshaw, again, sort of somebody that emerged maybe in the 80s, maybe even in the 70s, an artist that is associated with land art in a way, environmental art, Agnes Dennis. Then, you know, you have artists that artists like Karsten Holler or Karen Klimnick, who were emerging in the 90s. Alex Lambert, same thing. Simon Leung, again, emerging at that moment. So it's a mix of people, but I guess what I find to be particularly interesting about this box is how you read it. I mean, how you approach it. You have things in here where, you know, there's some photocopy piece and it says no fly, and there's essentially a fly being reproduced. There's a possible attribution on the bottom right, but you can't make it out. The copy is so marginal. But for example, this Bioinformatica card, General Key, gives you information, and there's a orange tie with an image on the verso. There is no information whatsoever ever as to authorship, and mm-hmm. how you navigate through this box is a bit of a it's a challenge, and it assumes a different level of engagement than everything being just sort of identified, let's just say, like Aspen, where it's all out there very clearly who did what.
Do you think that they wanted to make a comment that it didn't matter who did what? It's just that these things are, you know, worth taking, you know, putting together as a survey of this moment?
I can't say that, but what I can say is I'm sure that there certainly was an interest to produce something that wasn't straightforward. I mean, I think the notion that they would have this checklist of sorts, but have contents that were not identified. Before I really looked at this in depth, I always heard that these boxes actually had the contributions had no identifying markings whatsoever. So it was even. The names of the artists were, you had to piece it together, and it was almost a game to identify who did what. That's not exactly the case. There's a little bit more information there. Again, this is a box which has the possibility of being an exhibition, not your typical exhibition, but you take these things out of the box and present them in this or that way, and certainly, the quantity is there and the interest is there to produce an exhibition. The other box I have, these boxes also, not that it's terribly important, but interesting all the same. These boxes come in two versions. The regular edition version, which you're looking at now, which isn't particularly regular, and a deluxe edition version, which I only have one copy of, and I think it even may be that box that is the box that I have another version of, and I'm not sure how much I would have to compare them, take this box apart. To compare, but the actual container itself is different. This box right here is wooden, and that box is obviously not. So the same title,
Blast.
It's a Blast box. Whether or not it's 4, I'd have to unwrap it. But all I know is that the deluxe edition boxes are contained differently. Anyway. let's move forward because there are a number of things I'd like to review here.
Okay.
I am going to show you a number of group boxes today, and it seems like most of the boxes that I've presented thus far have been group boxes opposed to editions produced by artists singly.
Yeah.
However, that would not be the case. It just happens that the historical examples outside of, let's just say, the Mönchengladbach series and the Flux boxes, which are largely individually authored,
and the Finlay,
most of the other, many of the other classic boxed editions were group editions.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to show you some non-group editions here today.
You mentioned the word assembling. Do you think that these boxed editions came out of assembling mail art publications? The idea?
I don't think so. I mean, if one was going to draw some sort of comparison between this Blast box that we just reviewed and and an assembling publication, I guess I would find that to be plausible. Okay, but for example, the Seven Objects, simply stated,
that's an exhibition.
It's something that was produced by an editioner, and the same thing with basically the same thing with all of those other boxes because all of them were published, if you will,
published
and these
with a budget,
exactly, and these
staff and designers,
exactly, and all mm-hmm. and these this Blast box. Bears closer relationship to an assembling publication because it's my understanding that the artist sent their contribution, their quantity of edition. I think these are editions of 100. Let's just see what this one is. 500. So the contributors produced 500 copies for the edition. At least for this Blast number 4. Stephen Lieber. Why? I said why. Thank you. So to answer your question, I would say that assembling publications may have the notion or the practice, the system may have specifically intersected with the production of Blast, but as to SMS, Aspen, Seven Objects, the Salto Arte box, I think that's really the case.
Yeah.
For example, with the Kiki box, again, I think that's closer to the model, but and maybe even the Spanish box. So I guess what I'd like to do next is show you two boxes that are published by galleries and for very different reasons. So this box, produced by a gallery called Spanish Box, located in Santa Barbara, California, asked the artists that they exhibited during the calendar year January through July 1996 to produce some kind of publication for this box.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a cardboard box. You can get it in any packaging store. There's nothing particularly deluxe about it, with what appears to be a rubber stamped front cover, although I guess that could be printed.
Yeah, it looks rubber stamped on the side, mm-hmm. too.
And inside, we essentially have multiples printed matter by those artists that showed at the gallery. And in some cases, for example, The contribution really was the organizer in the case of Michael Darling's contribution, because he contributed the material for the Mod Squad show, which he organized, including Sam Durant, Darcy Hubler, Jim Isserman, Dave Muller, Jorge Pardo, and Ben White. His contribution in this box is more of a catalog or catalog documentation like, but the other contributors contributed things that were more, they were multiples, etc. So, you know, the blow up item is the Carlos Malura, very much closely relates to his unique works. The Sally Elsby contribution was very much similar to what her work looks like, or what and the materiality of her work. It just happens to be a smaller format. Unfortunately, that is a little damaged, nature of it. As I said, the contribution to Mod Squad was basically an appendix produced
by Michael Darling.
By Michael Darling, the curator of that show. He was, I think, either at that point just beginning to work at MoCA, or right after. He's now the curator at Seattle Art Museum. Some printed works. This is a printed work. I'm imagining HydroCal. I guess that must be HydroCal, no? Moneyball. David Green interview. Yeah, this must be HydroCal, huh? Yeah, that has to be it.
Yeah.
So a multiple by Michael Pernesky. I don't actually know his work. A kind of a sort of interview like a contribution by Andrea Bowers and Moneyball. A tape work by Darren Little, and a work to be completed by Dave Muller. I'll read this. Dave Muller, the artist who also worked as 3-Day Weekend. His contribution is something where this piece is not considered finished by the artist until it has been built, preferably by the owner. For a signed certificate of authenticity, send a photo to Dave Muller and his previous his address in LA at that time. And he also was going to provide a bonus prize for originality and interior decor. Funny, typical.
So it's like a big piece of...
It's something to be constructed. He actually gives a model a general outline. It's basically some sort of domestic space which has to be, which can be constructed. So this gallery was short-lived. It didn't, it no longer is in existence. I'm not sure how much longer it existed past the publication of this Spanish box. Something also interesting about this, or interesting to me anyway, is the fact that the box, which I purchased going to Santa Barbara to get it, was not available for me to take away at the time of purchase. The gallery insisted, I guess that might be better, but yeah. The gallery insisted upon sending me the box. I asked Michael Darling about this. Why did they decide that it needed to be sent? And in fact, he didn't remember that distribution, that aspect of the distribution. Mm-hmm. In any case, this box functions as a kind of it's a kind of multiple as documentation of the activities of a gallery that
It's like sort of a gallery portfolio or
Right, with original contributions. Now, this on the other hand is another story. This is published by, if you want to call it published, by a gallery, again, short-lived in San Francisco, called Kiki. It's called the Kiki Box. It was an edition of 30. And that's the total number of copies made. So in other words, there was no artist proof aspect to the edition. And it's contained in a wooden box. And inside the box are contributions, both multiple-like and unique, by the artists that showed at the gallery or artists that had some sort of connection to the gallery. And so the names of the artists included are D.L. Alvarez, Joan-Jett Black, Nayland Blake, Aaron Courtney, Mark Ewart, Vincent Fecto, Mark Gonzalez, Donna Hahn, Cliff Hanks, Scott Hueker, Philip Horowitz, David Johnson, Kevin Killian, John Lindell, Connell Ray Little, Keith Marison, Michelle Rollman, and Wayne Smith, and finally Jim Winters. Basically, this catalog was, this multiple box, this publication, was produced to more or less support the gallery. And these were basically donated contributions, thus the fact that they only made 30. I mean, there are no artist proofs. I'm repeating myself, but it's important detail, in my opinion, in to know that many of the artists didn't have copies of this, which is atypical for, you know, edition projects. In addition, this gallery was, you might say, as one, if there was a gallery that might depict or figure a sort of art being produced in San Francisco at the time, this gallery would be a very good example of presenting a certain kind of work or style of work or class of work. Basically, they were showing mostly queer artists. And that was really the thrust. I'm not positive, but I was always told that Nayland Blake somehow influenced to a certain extent what the gallery showed, although that's just what I heard. But the contributions here, as I previously said, are of a mixed sort. Some of them are additioned, if you will. In that they're like a sticker done 30 times or whatever, and others are unique. Okay, they might be working off a portrait of whatever, like a portrait of. Let's go to the
example.
Yeah.
They're all enclosed in envelopes
Enclosed in envelopes, and they have a very mixed group. Yeah. Okay. For example. This is by Aaron Courtney, and whose work I'm not particularly familiar with. It's in a bag, it says, "Hello, my name is Needy." And inside, you essentially have a drawing on cardboard. Okay, so it clearly is not an additioned work, signed as well by the artist. The contribution by Nayland Blake, on the other hand, you might say, is a more typical edition. It's a silkscreen, if I'm not incorrect, on canvas from 94. The Keith Mayerson is also a unique work. This is some drawing of Kurt Cobain. Kurt Cobain is dead. And they were all, obviously, I don't know if it was a series of portraits of Kurt Cobain or if there was a mixed group of portraits. But in any case, it's certainly a unique work by Mayerson. I saw this box being presented at the gallery. It was a modest-sized gallery. It was around where needles and pins used to be on, I forget the street, what is that? 14th
and Carrero.
14th and Carrero. It was around there where this gallery was. They kept very intermittent hours. You'd go when they were supposed to be open and they weren't open. You know, typical Milanese type gallery structure going on there. But in any case, I saw this show, and it occupied the entire gallery, even though, I mean, these are modest-sized contributions, but it was an extremely compelling show in that space. Somehow the sizing of these works made a good amount of sense, both. And let's just see the Vincent Fecto. For some reason, it's not in there. Great. Guess I'm going to have to...
to investigate.
Yeah.
Through the other folders.
Yeah, well, we're not going to do it now, but... I guess that's what happens when you show things to people. People take them.
probably misplaced, but...
I doubt it, actually. Yeah, Jim Winters, right?
Mm-hmm.
Playhouse. Mm-hmm.
Sculpt and subscreen.
Right? Yeah.
Maybe.
Anyway, let's move on and remember that my Vincent Fecto has been stolen. Or misplaced. I have my Keith Marison. One more group box, and then we'll move on to some individually produced editions. This box.
It's again a box where you could. Pick it up at a regular
right.
box store.
Yeah, I mean it's some sort of gift box,
mm-hmm.
Which has this obi. What are these called?
I don't remember.
Okay, some sort of belt essentially that women wear, and I haven't seen a lot of men wear them, so I mean I guess there might be some. And that was the sort of closure for this box edition that was produced on the occasion of an exhibition of Sharon Lockhart, Laura Owens, and Frances Stark at Blum & Poe Gallery in 1997. And this box, the contributors were not, one of the contributors to the box, Sharon Lockhart, was at that time represented by Blum & Poe, while the other two, Laura Owens and Frances Stark, were not. And the idea for the show was, I believe, something that either Blum or Poe came up with, and that is that it seemed like these three artists, women artists emerging in LA right at this moment, are all having reasonably busy careers, art careers already, were often in conversation, going to their each other's studio for feedback, etc. They were, I guess, quite close at this moment in time.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess Blum or Poe noticed this and suggested that it might be an interesting idea to do some sort of group show collaboration, and thus this show. And and I don't know how it occurred, but the idea to make a box edition. Up to this point in time, I don't recall Laura Owens making additions of any sort, Laura Owens being a painter and also making works on paper. Francis Stark was certainly making artist books at this time and before. And I'm not sure about Sharon Lockhart. I may have seen a print by her earlier, or one at least knows that she was interested in producing printed material, as she did a number of interesting poster-like works. However, I don't know of her making anything that is along this line. So it caught me a bit by surprise that there was this multiple box produced. When you look at what this again was a component of a show at Blum and Poe at the time at Blum and Poe, which at that time was a very modest sized gallery. It was essentially the exhibition space wasn't really larger than this rhombus room here. In fact, it was smaller. That was about the same size. So in the show they had a stack of 30 of these boxes. That's the addition here. It is 30, right? It's numbered.
I think it was here. Or it's not. We'll get up here, maybe.
Well, in any case, it's something like addition of 30. And the contributions are mixed in that there is there are certain works here. Well, they're all signature works, or a certain percentage of them are obviously by this or that artist if you knew the work. The Lockhart, probably the Lockhart photo is portraits of four of the girls that appeared in her Gosha Goka, or however you say it, film the women
basketball
players.
It's an edition of 48 copies.
48 copies. And the Francis Stark contribution is essentially something on carbon paper. It's a typing, although it looks like a typing, but it's not a typing, on carbon paper, which is very typical of what her work looked like then. And there, she certainly still incorporates carbon paper in what she's doing now. And how this reads is pound page, which I'm imagining to have something to do with typing for her. Francis Stark not only makes paintings, collages, works on paper and artist books, but she also is a writer. I guess she also makes films and videos, but she's also a writer, and there is at least one book out on her collected writings. The primary, or the most sort of special contribution to me anyway, by Laura Owens is a unique work on paper of reasonable size. It's a watercolor and pencil work. In addition, there is this mixed material which assumes a lot of the viewer to get at what this all concerns, in that there's just a very general mix of things here. For example, this looks to be a picture of Gina Rowlands. This is some country western album, I think, Love the Common People. This is what appears to be a film still, I think. What it looks like also, a film still that looks even like Baldessari. However, I think what this is, this image right here, that image is, I believe, a picture of Jean Roux, or Jean Rouche, The cinema verite filmmaker, ethnographer, filmmaker, and that must that bit right there, that image may have something to do with a trip that he took in 1947, doing some sort of film on a hippo hunt along the Niger River. For some reason, these artists had, or at least one of these artists had, some fascination with this filmmaker. In fact, there's information in here, some sort of photocopy or whatever that they obviously placed in here, that was where he's mentioned in some direct way. He, I forget if he passed away right about this time in 1997. Or not, I think maybe he did, and maybe that spurned them on. In any case, this image right here, which is titled Flag Girls, in the exhibition there was an image of the three artists that also mimicked this this photograph as well. I don't know what's on this CD. I don't remember because I haven't heard it for a while.
One really seems like it's kind of an investigation of their practices, their influences, and you know, notes and photocopies and sketches.
Exactly.
Different than some of the others that seem to be more finished works by artists.
Right. Well, I mean, I wouldn't say that this is not finished. It just assumes a different kind of reading.
Yeah, it's more of a piece in itself, so it's even less of a group, because it's taking the idea of this group structure and making it a piece.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, I this is something where I don't really see the contents making up a kind of exhibition, you might say, but something that you really need to spend time with and try to piece the elements together to make any sense of the mixed material.
Mm-hmm.
In regards to, finally, to get to a box that was produced by just one artist, this shoebox was produced as an edition by the artist, the French artist, maybe she's Swiss, but I think French, maybe she's Swiss, Sylvie Fleury. And her work in general is dealing with, consumption, and she appropriates cultural products and recombines them largely. She customizes them, and she is forever fascinated with the trappings of glamour, fashion, and beauty. I mean, just for example, this overview exhibition catalog of hers looks like it's a fashion magazine. And what this box, Vital Perfection, is a it's a shoebox, custom-made shoebox, which has, it's been customized, which has fake fur inside, and it's an edition of 100. And I saw this work shown at the gallery Emmanuel Perrotin on Rue Beaubourg in, 1993. And this show, what was shown was not just this these boxes, which was the entire edition of 100 boxes shown, but also it was shown with a person's, a woman's collection of shoes. So it was this combination. There was some.
So the boxes were just stacked.
No, they weren't. They weren't stacked. They were all over. It was more of a scattering piece. Yeah, open and closed, but they were also amidst this woman's collection of shoes. And it was a known collection, I guess.
And the shoes were for sale?
The shoes were not for sale, but the boxes were. The boxes were published by an a gentleman named Hervé Mikhailov, who I guess doesn't really do editions anymore and isn't really a gallerist. I think he's an art consultant for a corporation in Paris at this point. But this was the presentation of this box was quite something, I must admit. This box that we're seeing that's here is a you might show this first. This box is something that you construct construct yourself. It was the initial distribution of this publication, which functioned as both an artist publication but also an exhibition catalog on the occasion of Jorge Pardo's house that was house as sculpture that was presented by MoCA in Los Angeles around 1997. And the box that you see constructed here was initially distributed flat in many parts on this strangely cut piece of cardboard, which for all I know might actually be the land that the house may have been built on. That's a guess, but maybe this is the plot, and you put this you construct the box and maybe you showed it on there. I have no idea if that's the case. In any case, this box includes both an essay by Anne Goldstein about the work by Jorge Pardo, and in addition, it includes a interview by Amanda Cruz with Jorge Pardo. In any case, this box is has been constructed and vacuum packed, sealed. I mean, just so this is what it looks like in a constructed state. I guess what's great about this is if it wasn't vacuum sealed like this, shrink wrapped, whatever you want to call it. Mm-hmm. I guess the idea was you both read it, but you can, and so it's an exhibition catalog, it's a multiple, mm-hmm. but it's kind of, but you can also keep things in this, you know, and I guess there are things that you could, so mm-hmm. this is the acknowledgement box, you know, this box is, I don't know, this looks like something you could put lipstick in. I forgot to mention that this box was designed by Pei White, the artist Pei White, who I think maybe at this time was also Jorge Pardo's girlfriend, or maybe before, or not after, because certainly. This is certainly a different sort of publication with exhibition chronology on the inside flap, on the flaps for the outside, and it's interesting on a number of levels, besides the fact that it's designed by an artist for another artist, besides the fact that it kind of resembles that the box could actually be used for multiple purposes, that it has this information printed on it. I guess it really folds into how the house itself can be viewed. I guess for the rest of this hour, I'd like to quickly breeze through I've been lucky enough over the years to get in the mail, and that is during the Christmas time holidays, or during the end of the year. These are boxed editions or these are editions that come in boxes, usually just for, I mean, they come in boxes, but I guess I would say that the box kind of, well, I mean, the boxes are basically for mailing,
mm-hmm.
but I'm at the same time,
also...
at the same time, they look like boxes that are meant to remain.
Like the Finley,
yeah, they look
they're...
like they're to remain with the works, with
they're
the labels being artisan formed,
probably archival.
Well, I don't know about that because this is cardboard, but I know that in some cases, for example, the Vic Munoz, even the stamps were,
mm-hmm.
you know, customized. That they, because it was probably sent FedEx, but they put stamps on them anyway, and they were artist stamps, so they were like, they're so.
It's probably another sort of team situation, like a designer and a designer working with the artist.
Oh, certainly.
To make this whole package work. Yeah.
Certainly. These are projects where they, I can't speak to how long they take per year to produce, but I do know that one wouldn't know because it's pretty much considered to be a secret about the selections of who they're choosing for the year, for this year's edition. So there's a lot, there is to a certain extent a lot of secrecy about you know how these things get produced, but it's very, very clear that these things are involved to make, and I'm without question they involve a lot of people beyond just the artist to make them. This was a book which they haven't produced many artist books on as editions in the history of these Christmas gifts, but this is a book that was done by Kara Walker, and it's a laser cut pop-up book. And, you know, fairly fantastic production here. A little fragile, but...
Mm-hmm. Swaying trees.
Mm-hmm.
I think they're maybe supposed to go together.
Oh, yeah, they... Anyway, this is one of my favorites, the Walker book. But
yeah, with that deep chocolate color, the whole thing is very well thought out, well considered. So this is a really special case because it's not a subscription. It's, you know, you can't buy them from the editioner. This is just a gift. And so it's completely up to the Norton family who they're going to send this to.
Yeah, I mean, what I was told is that these boxed editions, or maybe better put, these editions that come in boxes, are given... clients of Norton Editions, I mean, excuse me, clients of Norton Systems, that software, right? And they're given to curators, international curators that they know, and they're given to all the artists in their collection. And they're given also to all the dealers that they have purchased works from.
Mm-hmm.
And I know that they're given to certain collectors that they know. Okay? And that's the base list. And how people get off the list, because at a certain moment, there were a great number of people that were eliminated from the list. And why that happened or how that happened may have been a function of just how much one of these editions cost to produce, or maybe just how many they could have been, how many they could have produced. But I don't know what the story is, but fortunately I've received a good number of them. This is the Murakami edition. Check out the box. Mm. This is the first one I got. This is the Lorna Simpson. Comes in a wooden box. I have the packing box somewhere else. And this is from what year? Not that it's that important. Whatever. It doesn't really matter what year it is. But these are three wishbones. Made out of different materials. And I was told that the making of this box involved a good percentage of one Indian reservation for a month in time to make these wishbones, or that's what I was told. I don't know if that's true or not, but the finish of this edition is quite something. I remember when I got them, I got this first one, I was absolutely shocked. I had heard of these editions, but I had never received one previous, and it was a thrill of sorts. So, other ones that are interesting, some of the more successful ones, I think. This is the Jim Hodges contribution, again in another box. And this is this is the Peter Coffin, which looks like...
Yeah, the Jim Hodges is the blanket.
Right, but it's also contained in a box like this. And this is a more recent one. This is a Peter Coffin box, which is from 2006. And this element right here, this sort of photo collage of sorts, lifts up and... creates this kind of, I don't know, kaleidoscope of sorts.
Like a spiral.
Yeah, maybe you can
rainbow
put that.
Spiral, right?
Maybe you can put that away for
called.
Me. It's a little complicated to get back in, isn't it? So, here was the Jim Hodges. There we go. Easy to damage, isn't it?
There.
Super.
It's a little, yeah, that's the way it should go back. Yes.
Okay. Same box, nearly. This is the Jim Hodges blanket. This side down, there's a this side down, this side up card that goes with it. Jim transforms mundane materials into works of art inspired by natural forms. He is best known for his cascading curtains of silk flowers. This blanket suggests an imaginary landscape. The poem written by Jim is intended to be read in reverse as if the words were reflected in water. Jim was born in 57. The blanket measuring 52 by 72 inches is the exact size of his bed. They don't always spell things out like that, but yeah. Okay. I guess just to quickly review, other editions that they've done include a Marclay work, a Yinko Shinobare, Anna Gaskell, a Fred Thielau edition, a Lawrence Wiener edition was one of the earlier
the
ones.
The Big Nunez is the one with the big pasta plate.
Exactly.
Correct?
You either got a pasta plate, you got a choice of either a pasta plate or an ashtray. And it was the photo image was by Munez, Vic Munez. So besides Murakami, there, I guess, guess who else did one that...
There was another teacup that had a saucer that was askew, and the teacup
right,
was askew.
Right, that
the
that,
artist who does
Robert,
the skulls,
that,
right?
Yeah, right, Spin and Teacup, Robert Lazzarini,
mm-hmm.
Did that one. The Marclay is a music box. There's a Brian Eno contribution.
Right, the cards.
Yeah, Brian Eno with Pei White. In any case, there's also a Daniel Martinez edition. So I guess I don't think we were at all thorough here or necessarily well prepared on this last go around, but one gets an idea that the multiple production in the 90s was very active. And that it seemed like it almost became a style towards the late 70s that artists were working in multiple format in general. I think it certainly has changed going into the millennium, and that it seems somehow less of a thing to do. But that is the multiple projects, that is, despite the fact that activity still continues, but it just doesn't seem quite as active. I guess I don't really know where else to go with this all, except to say, if you listen to any of this, I hope it wasn't too dull. Anyway, thank you very much, Amber.
Thank you, Stephen. I think you did a great job.